You're listening to Black Mask on CKW 95.9 FM. My name is Michael. I'm the normally function as the news director at CKW. I'm joined on the line right now by Robin Allen. She's held many executive positions in the private and public sectors, including president and CEO of the Insurance Corporation of British Columbia, vice president finance for Parkland Ventures Limited, and senior economist for BC Central Credit Union. And she provided written evidence on economic and insurance issues related to the proposed Northern Gateway Pipeline project, which gave a deposition back in early 2012. And so we're going to talk to her about the recent decision by the Harper government to give the go-ahead to this project. So, Robin Allen, are you there?
Hi, Michael.
Hi. So thank you very much for joining us. I guess it comes as no big surprise that the Harper government did decide to approve this project.
Well, no, it's not a surprise at all. And in fact, I think Mr. Harper and Joe Oliver stepped outside the boundaries years ago when they backed it so strongly while the process was in play. So, no, this is not a surprise at all, and the 209 conditions were the conditions that the panel put on their report. So, it essentially, I think what's the surprise is the way they did it, that the Harper government didn't have the consideration for the Canadian public to actually have a press conference to talk about it, to say we understand this is a serious issue, that there's a lot of controversy, but here's the decision we've made and why. Instead, they issued a press release quite late, 2 o'clock yesterday, 4 paragraphs, and have not been available at all for being accountable to the Canadian public, and I think that speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that I'm not hearing a lot of support for this decision from grassroots folks. It seems even a lot of the provincial politicians, even federal MPs, are kind of trying to hope that nobody's paying attention.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, there's 21 MPs from the Harper government here in BC, and I think they should all be worried about their seats. As well, the BC government has said, you know, you haven't met our terms and conditions, and we're still a no. So, really, I think, you know, maybe the Harper government put itself into a difficult position because of how adamant it was over the process, and just the clear way that, you know, there's a huge denial about climate change and the impact of global warming, and you know, none of those considerations went into the report at all. The panel refused to look at those issues. As you mentioned, I did do an economic analysis. As we all know, they've been putting this project forward is a great economic opportunity, and that opportunity should outweigh the environmental challenge. My evidence showed very clearly that the economic case that Enbridge was making was only looking at the benefits to oil producers, not the cost to the rest of our economy or to Canadians, or in fact costs that communities and individuals bear when you force through a project that simply strips natural resources out of Canada and ships them off to other countries for their benefit.
Could you, it's been a couple of years since you presented your analysis on the station. Could you guide us again through the heart of your argument? It is essentially, notwithstanding the environmental concerns, yours was focused on the economics. Could you maybe, you know, help us recall what those arguments were?
Yeah, I think primarily there's two focuses. The first is that when you take non-renewable fossil fuels out of the ground and ship them raw to other countries, all of the value is added when that resource is upgraded and then refined into petroleum products. And so, you know, for example, you take a barrel of bitumen out of the ground, it's worth maybe $35. You upgrade it in Alberta in an upgrader, it's worth $70 a barrel. And if you actually turn it into petroleum products, it's worth $100 a barrel. So what we've really got happening here with crude heavy oil pipelines, Keystone XL, Northern Gateway, Trans Mountain, what these pipelines do essentially is rob our economy of the opportunity of creating wealth for our economy. So if we're going to take the oil out of the ground And that, I mean, that's even another question. If we're going to take it out of the ground, we should, in fact, make sure that it creates economic strength and stability in Canada. And it's done so at a pace that acknowledges environmental challenges. So these pipelines essentially rip our economy, rip it out of the ground and ship it off to other economies. And that's the first major problem with this strategy. And none of those costs were recognized by Enbridge. The second major issue is Enbridge argues that when they ship this oil off, it's going to reduce the supply in Canada, in fact in North America. And when you reduce the supply in North America, it raises the price of oil on every barrel. And so the way they got their benefits is to say, we're going to ship, you know, 525,000 barrels a day off to Asia, and when we do that, we're going to raise the price of oil on every barrel. And then when that goes into our refineries in Canada, because we still do create petroleum products, about 500,000 barrels a day is used, that raises the price of the pump. And so here we have a situation where producers might be getting more money, but for Canadian consumers and small businesses and communities, they're going to pay higher prices. And none of those higher prices were considered as a cost in their benefits case.
Mm. So with those sorts of inputs, sir, that's what the economy runs on.
Exactly.
And so as those costs go up, then that has a depressive effect on energy-consuming industries, right?
Exactly. Industries and individuals. And you know, our budgets are constrained already, and so they want us to pay more for resources that should belong to Canadians.
Now, I remember when NDP leader Thomas Mulcair brought up this subject, he used the term Dutch disease.
Mm-hmm.
And there seemed to be a major outcry, not just from the government and other political parties, but even from much of the mainstream press. And it was portrayed as basically trying to play the regions against each other, you know, the Alberta oil patch versus the Ontario. What do you make of that kind of portrayal of these sorts of critiques?
Okay, and well, the Dutch disease is based on the notion that if you create raw resources in Canada, like for oil, and you ship it off to other countries, it puts upward pressure on our Canadian dollar, because the price of oil is denominated in U.S. dollars. So a whole, you know, raft of money flowing in because we're expanding our oil exports will put price pressure upwards on the value of the Canadian dollar. When that happens, it makes the value of our other exports, like manufacturing, that are sold in Canadian dollars, it makes them more expensive. And so what it does is you might have a stronger Alberta economy, but it becomes at the expense of Ontario's or other economies that depend on other activities. And so, I mean, Mulcair was quite right about the concerns over the pressure on our currency. And I think the major media pushback is just a reflection of how powerful the oil lobby is. That the media, that the a lot of our elected representatives are impressioned by the oil sector. And so whatever the oil sector wants, the oil sector is supposed to get. And that becomes a problem when you want to have an open and honest debate about the forces that are affecting our standard of living and quality of life in Canada. And so you have misinformation, you have pushback, that in a society where there was open and honest dialogue, it wouldn't happen. So that's what happened with this so-called Dutch disease debate, is it got distorted, when in fact there are some very valid arguments about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, when you gave your presentation back 2.5 years ago, you had applied for late intervener status and were initially denied. You had to go through, you had to ask for the support of the Alberta Federation of Labor to get your evidence presented. Do you want to talk about how that process played out? Is it somewhat unusual for a National Energy Board hearing on such a subject?
Oh yeah. So what happened was I came into the process a little bit late. And started to do an analysis and didn't think I was going to want to intervene. The intervener status means that you can have your evidence put on the record, the board will in fact consider it, and you can be questioned on it, and you're considered to be an expert. So when I applied for late intervener status, at the same time there were two First Nations and the Alberta ration of labor that was also applying for late intervener status. I was refused. The other three parties were approved. And I had been working for months on my evidence, my report. So I contacted the Alberta Federation of Labor. I had not spoken to them before and said, I have this report. I think it's an economic analysis that you would find complementary to the work you're doing. If you'd like me to be your witness, you can have my report. And they read it over the weekend, found it to be compatible, and we worked together. So it was totally pro bono on my part, as my intervention was going to be anyway, but that was how I got my evidence tabled, and I became an expert witness.
Okay, excellent.
So now, I was surprised that I got refused. Now, I have since applied to be an intervener in the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline, and I was accepted. So what I discovered over the course of the Northern Gateway hearings, I did evidence not just on economics, but also on insurance risk and financial viability issues. And the panel actually had a number of questions for me on my evidence and ended up adopting my recommendations around requiring Enbridge to have $1 billion in liability insurance. So Enbridge only wanted, I think, $200 million, and they weren't sufficiently structured to be able to pay for a major spill. So the panel ended up relying a lot on my evidence. So you know, I guess, fortuitous that I was, in fact, able to work with the AFL on that.
Yeah, but they definitely acknowledge the analysis, and they're not, it's not being disregarded.
It was accepted and in fact, considered as valuable. No one has refuted my economic analysis. It's not refuted. What has happened with the way that the panel works is they have what they call a list of issues and a scope of review. And what they have said is that we will not consider issues like hollowing out the Alberta energy sector because they're exporting raw resources when they could be adding value by upgrading and refining in Alberta. They say that's up to the industry. We're not going to include that in our review of the pipeline. The pipeline is to transport oil, so we're just going to look at the economics of that. The panel would not also consider the impact of a price increase on the oil as being a negative economic consequence, because that's a downstream impact, and they wouldn't consider that. So essentially what you've got is you've got a National Energy Board saying that it would like to look at the public interest impacts of these projects, but that it so narrowly defines the scope of its review that it can only really come up with a conclusion to support the project. And that's, I think that's a disservice to the Canadian public, because the public's attitude towards, you know, what do we care about? Well, the public cares about what are the environmental consequences of this activity? What is the opportunity we're missing because we're exporting raw resources instead of adding value? What's the impact to me when I go to the pumps to buy gasoline, which until there's alternatives, I really can't get off my dependency? That's what the public cares about. But the National Energy Board limits the scope of what they're willing to consider and is increasingly doing that. If you look past the Keystone XL that they approved and Alberta Clipper that they approved and then what they did with Gateway and what they're now doing with Kinder Morgan, they're increasingly narrowing the scope every time the public comes forward and says, but have you considered this? This is what matters to us. And now they're excluding those things that are important. And I think eventually, I think the credibility of the National Energy Board is in question right now.
Yeah, it sounds like what's happening essentially is they're shaping their parameters or the scope around, you know, the project they're determined to go ahead with.
Yeah, how can we say yes? That's what it looks like, and that's what it certainly has been exposed to me as I've been increasingly involved in the process, in good faith, as a public participant concerned about the public interest. I mean, I'm an economist presenting a public interest case. Mm-hmm. And in the past, we could expect our government to do that. That was what they were elected to do. The Harper government does not really care about what the public wants. Mm-hmm. It certainly doesn't care about, you know, when you have a letter like Joe Oliver wrote a few years back, charging people like me as being foreign-funded radicals or First Nations concerned about their rights as being somehow setting up to slow down the process, or environmentalists that are trying to figure out how do we internalize the external costs of climate change. You know, to suggest these people are somehow not operating in good faith is indicative of a kind of a disdain for the public dialogue that's necessary. You can't progress as a society unless you have really strong, open, transparent debate.
Yes.
And so it's very unfortunate that I think the credibility of the NEB is in question with the report that they released on Northern Gateway. There's a lot of expert testimony on the science that was ignored. I think we had a letter from 300 scientists recently saying that the scientific analysis is flawed. So it's not just on the economics, it's also on the environmental stuff that has been not fully and properly presented through the board's report. And then they recommend approval with conditions, and the federal government rubber stamps it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and so it sounds like there's... excellent arguments against it. Like the public is picking this up clearly, and
I think so. And I think that's certainly when I started, I realized that, you know, the Canadian public is pretty intelligent, and given enough information that they can work with, usually makes pretty good decisions, you know, about how we move forward with our decision making and our industrial development. It's very clear that heavy oil pipelines out of Alberta to ship raw bitumen and put not just our environment but economy at risk doesn't make sense. And so you're seeing the pushback. Out here in BC, I think it's even stronger than what you're seeing. I don't think this pipeline will ever get built. Northern Gateway will never get built.
Well, Robin Allen, that's certainly, I'd say that's very good news from the standpoint of not only environmental and Indigenous solidarity, but also from just a straight economic common sense.
I have a website, www.robinallan.com, and I put up a video a few months back on the whole economic analysis around the value added and why we need to say no to these heavy oil pipelines. And so I would encourage, if any of your listeners are interested, to go and take a view at that. It's only 20 minutes, and it tries to encapsulate all of the issues and the 10 reasons why we, on an economic focus, why we need to say no.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Robin.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Robin Allen, whose economic analysis on the Kinder Morgan and Enbridge pipelines.